Welcome back to the program. Tim, I love it when you bring a story to the table that I'm not familiar with, and you said to us, we're going to need to talk to this man. Ryan Leaf is his name, and we did our homework. We did listen to some podcasts. The best way to describe it is that he's walked out of college football as one of the, if not the hottest prospect in football, along with Peyton Manning is a name
at that time,
we're all very familiar with. And he was a number two draft pick and went to the San Diego Chargers. And his story, well, went from being at the top of the world and it spiraled and ended up in jail and has now re-emerged and it's got a really uplifting story to tell. And we've tracked him down. He's been good enough to join us. Ryan, welcome to the program. Welcome to Australia.
Thank you very much. This is pretty amazing what we can do with technology. I love it.
It's great. We've got the Zoom happening so we can see you. Where do we find you right now? Are you in LA?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. Just spent the morning hosting the Rich Eisen Show, talking about all things when it comes to American football, and just got home. I'm home with my family here, and they were really interested to see me do a show in Australia. So that's fun.
Ryan, before we talk about the journey and all the other things associated with your life to this point, you've got an Australian connection. You played alongside Darren Bennett at the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, Darren and I were extremely close when we were teammates. I was a teammate of his for three seasons, and he was exceptionally good at his job. And then was an incredibly better person too. And, when things unraveled for me and I struggled, he was always a guy that had my back. And I was just so amazed with what he could do with the football. I mean, we would throw into a bucket from like 30 or 40 yards. Like, he'd kick it into the bucket. That's how accurate he was with a football. So he did some amazing things. Great guy, continues to live in San Diego. I ran into him a year or two ago at an event. So it was really good to see him.
Hey, Ryan, we spent a lot of time talking in our game, AFL football. You can be drafted as an 18-year-old, and the pressure that is applied on 18-year-olds going the number one draft pick in the AFL draft, that type of thing. But how head spinning was it for you back coming out of college, as I'm assuming you would have been 21, 22 years of age? Is that right?
Yeah, I was 21 years old when I was drafted. I thought this was exactly how it was supposed to be, right? This is where I was headed. So when I was drafted first in the first round and given a contract for that size, I believe that's the way it was supposed to be. So I expected big things. I don't know if I fully understood the scrutiny that would come with it. Also, the start of the internet, kind of aging myself here with that statement, but it was amazing to see the amount of pressure and the amount of scrutiny and the magnifying glass that came with it. I did not anticipate that or plan for that in any way to deal with it in a healthy manner.
Your contract, I think you said on All the Smoke on the podcast that I listened to, was like $30 million. Was that the first contract that you signed?
Yeah, it was the largest contract in NFL history at the time. $31.5 million. It would be eclipsed by Peyton Manning about a week later when he signed his contract by about, not by much, by like $250,000. But yeah, it was a scenario where, I didn't think about money. I didn't necessarily believe it would change me. But I can say that it gave me a sense of self-importance that isn't real, but I manifested it because of that. I just thought I was a better person because of what I got to do and how much I made. I was rich and famous, and that's in America, that's what I believed success to be at the time. Of course, that's changed significantly, but that was how I thought of it in the moment.
So we'll get to the challenges that you've had to confront over the past 10 years or so, but your name will always be linked with Peyton Manning. So Peyton comes, he's the Hall of Fame and one of the greatest players of all time. He's taken a pick one, you're taking a pick two, you're at the draft camp, you're rooming together, so you're going to be linked forever. Is that part of the pressures that you had to confront? Tim talks about the pressure. You won your first two games with San Diego. He lost his first two games. You're on top of the world. You think it's going to last forever and ever, but it doesn't. Do you see yourself comparing, his life to the way that yours ended up turning out?
No, I think that would probably be pretty detrimental. You know, he's a guy that I probably easily could resent, but I don't. We've stayed close. He's a good friend. If I need anything, any kind of support, I reach out to him. And, you know, he made a good comment. He made a comment to me last year around this time. We were in Canton for his induction into the Hall of Fame. And he said, "Hey, man, we're both 46 years old. You know, we're both, you know, in broadcasting now, retired football players and dads. I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, it was a perfect practice in being where your feet are in the moment. So there was no resentment on why or how or if. I was really proud of him because I know how hard it is to be a successful NFL quarterback, and to be one of the greatest ever to play is such an achievement. So yeah, we kind of come full circle, I suppose, with different paths along the way, but we're kind of in the same spots now.
Hey Ryan, your life spiraled out of control. What was the worst, the depth that you actually found yourself at? What was the worst part of that?
Well, I mean, you'd think it would be ending up in prison, right? You'd think that would be it. I suppose any moment where I was contemplating taking my own life, I mean, that's got to be the worst thing in the world, that you believe in your mind that everybody and yourself was better off with you not here than to be here, right? That's probably the bottom of it all. But I would probably argue that there isn't a real bottom or a lowest until you're gone. As long as you keep getting back up, I think that might be my superpower. Tripping myself up, getting knocked down, and finding a way to get back up. That may be ultimately what is my purpose.
Well, often people talk about this. They say, you know, I had to hit rock bottom. I hit rock bottom, and that was the trigger for me to turn my life around. But you've got a different view about that.
Well, I mean, I think there just comes a point where you make a choice, right? You either have to go another direction or you're going to die. I mean, I don't put a ton of importance on the bottom of things because, you know, ultimately it's what got me to where I needed to get to. So it's almost, in some senses, a gratitude thing. I mean, when I talk to people, when I speak, I say, you know, how grateful I was to have spent 32 months in prison. I don't recommend it, but, you know, I'm grateful for it. And I think that's a perspective that I have that's different, I think. But most people that have gone through it will say that, you know, I was still here. It may have been a miserable time, but I was still here. And there's a lot of us, peers of mine who played in the NFL, friends, other human beings who have just disappeared or who are gone. And that isn't the case. And that for me is ultimately what I believe to be the bottom.
We're speaking with Ryan Leaf, who's got an amazing story to tell, former number two pick and an NFL quarterback at San Diego. Ryan, I was interested listening to some stuff, and you played these two games, you got yourself hurt, you had a bad third game, had a blow-up with the media, which was captured, and then it got replayed, and then you went after the journalist that reported it. And then you said that you were portrayed in the media as the guy who wore the black hat, which is the villain, if you like, and that instead of you being your own authentic self, you adopted that mantra and said, okay, if that's what you want me to be, then I will be that. Was that one of the things that you know, was challenging the most in terms of trying to live your life authentically, but then saying, no, I'll be what the media are portraying me as?
Yeah, I think so. I think it really was, it was more kind of a resentment thing too. When people would be hypercritical of me, I was just kind of like, you know, screw you. I got this, rather than, you know, retreating and maybe taking a good look at myself in the mirror with some of my actions and things like that. So, you know, you look at Dennis Rodman and how he leaned into that, and, you know, he was just a different, you know, to be able to do that, your central nervous system is going to be on tilt at all times. You're always going to have to protect yourself be up and it takes a certain human being to be able to do that and still perform at the level in which he did. And I wasn't capable of performing against the best defenses in the world week in, week out, and then battling the deep, you know, battling media, battling my teammates, my bosses, fans. I mean, you can't be who you're not, in a sense, to still be good at what you do as a job.
Hey Ryan, before we talked about that first contract, $30 million, and that was back in 1998. Of that, how much did you walk away with from the game? How much did you have left of that $30 million by the time you walked away from the game?
Well, when I walked out of prison, I didn't have a dime. Not a cent. And I think that may have been one of the hardest things for me to finally admit. Like, I was in a position of the money was more important than, like, if somebody knew I was a drug addict or a felon, that was better than people knowing I was broke. Yeah. Right? That was worse. It's amazing what your mind will do and trick you into thinking what is important. And yeah, luckily for me, when I walked out of those prison doors, my mom and dad were there. There was a place for me to crash and lay my head until I figured things out. The NFL had a grant available to former players if they were seeking treatment and the help that they need. And luckily I applied for that and was granted it. So it paid for my treatment when I got out. And then I went to work. You know, I went to work in the recovery side of things. Job paid $15 an hour. But I tell people all the time, you know, I was making $5 million a year and was miserable and was a miserable person to be around and be. And now I was making $15 an hour and felt more value than I'd ever felt before. So that, you know, money was never the issue. Now money's all about taking care of my family now. That's all it is meaningful to me in any way, right? I need to work hard enough to make sure my family is taken care of. Me and how it presents or positions me in the eyes of others, you know, meaningless. You could think I'm a millionaire, or you could think I'm broke. It doesn't matter. It's not going to change, you know, what other people think of me. It's none of my business type of mentality.
Was there a moment in jail, Ryan? So you got, you're addicted to prescription drugs, your burglaries, you find yourself in jail. You're railing against that. You can't believe that the man is in jail. You're not getting the respect you think you deserve. Was there a moment when you were in jail that triggered this, you know, this change in mindset that now has you where you are today?
Yeah. I mean, there is. At the time, I didn't see it, right? I didn't understand that, because for about 26 of the 32 months I was in prison, I didn't do anything. I sat on my butt and I played the victim and I blamed others. And my roommate suggested we go down to the prison library one day and start helping prisoners who didn't know how to read, learn how to read. And, I had many of those come to Jesus moments in my life from coaches and mentors and family. And I didn't do anything about it. Right. I chose not to. And I can't tell you why I went that day. You know, I can't tell you why I went and did that. But I did, and it changed my perspective, because I walked into a room where there was a fellow, you know, human being in a place where you're not supposed to show vulnerability or anything, asked for help. I said, "Ryan, I can't read. Can you help me?" And I don't think I'd ever heard another man say something like that to another man. And so it shifted my mindset. Now, I didn't understand what was happening in the moment, right? You never do. But years later now, I can look back and see that that was the catalyst, because I started making it about other people and not me. I was being of service to another human being for the first time in my life. And that truly is the answer to where I'm at, you know, 10 years later now. It's the only reason.
Talking to Ryan Leaf, former number two NFL draft pick quarterback. On reflection now, when you think back to your life, your early childhood, the fact that you would have been feted and idolized as an athlete, do you think that contributed in any way to how it turned out for you?
Sorry. Can you say that again?
Do you think the way that you were feted and idolized as a young man, and maybe concessions that were given to you about behavior or the way that you treated other people as a young athlete, do you think that contributed in any way to where you ended up?
Definitely. I mean, that pedestal you get placed on, right, as a as an athlete, because you have a golden arm or you can do this or the other. A lot of times people aren't willing to hold you accountable for your actions because they need you on that field, right? They need you to do that. And when you have success, you know, there's nothing really anybody can do. You may be one of the most disliked people out there, but if you can come and compete every week and you are the hero, I mean, no one really can walk away and say, well, the guy's a jerk, but he's really good at what he does. So if you can't back it up with your play on the field, then it's a different story. So yeah, I think I was enabled. And then I surrounded myself with people who enabled my behavior. Guys that, you know, anybody who were critical of me and were trying to help or show me the mirror, I pushed out of my life, right? I surrounded myself with yes men. And never was truly held accountable. And certainly I wasn't going to hold myself accountable, right? I mean, I had never done that my whole life. Why would I start now?
Hey, Ryan, we've only scratched the surface. We get real-time feedback as we're going. We have a text machine here, and the response to your story is amazing. We're going to direct people to your podcast, Bust the Ryan Leaf Story, it's called, and the listening on that will be compulsory. And it's a great story. We love hearing it. We appreciate you joining us from the other side of the world, and we wish you well in your next endeavors.
Hey, you guys, thanks for taking the time. This has been pretty cool. I've never been to Australia. I hope to someday. I don't know if I'm allowed because I'm a convicted felon, but maybe someday I'll be able to come.
Well, you got your life back on track, and that's the most important thing. If you do make it down here, we'd love to see you here in the studio in Melbourne. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, fellas. Thanks for taking the time. Good to meet you.
How good? How good is that? Now, everyone wants to know where you can hear this story. Bust is the name of the podcast, the Ryan Leaf story. We listen to a podcast about
All the Smoke we listen to, yep.
Yeah, All the Smoke. And we'll put all that up on our socials. And you can follow Ryan's story. And what a great fella. What an articulate story to tell. And wasn't always the case, as by his own admission. Lost all sense of perspective along the way, but has now regained it. And great story of redemption there.